are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, July 17th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump gets bare naked and shows his asset.
Gross.
Yeah. The rats aren't fleeing the ship yet, but they are certainly moving to the higher parts of the boat. Russian spy indicted in the U.S. yesterday may very well be a conduit to NRA funding from Russia. Federal judge issues a temporary halt on deportations and the House to hold a fake abolish ICE vote. And is this the Brexit exit? The Brexit campaign fined and criminally referred in a campaign violation. Meanwhile, the FCC chair worried about a Democratic Congress, it's now worried about the sweetheart deal he gave to Sinclair Media. Meanwhile, the Dems rise across the country, and it's impacting policy across the board. New report shows FEMA unprepared for 2017, and there's no reason to think it's better now. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Pretty insane 24 hours, I would say. I don't know if I don't know, you
you talking about the home run derby?
The home run derby was insane at the
off the hook.
Off the hook. Yesterday was pretty crazy. It was pretty crazy. And we're going to get into this as we go on in the program. But and just as we went on air, we had a couple of clips of Donald Trump's press conference with Vladimir Putin. And I have to say that please don't misinterpret me, but I have to say that the response to that press conference was far more dramatic than I had anticipated. And it's fascinating to me. And maybe part of it is because, you know, we've been tracking this stuff. And I think, to a certain extent, what we're seeing with this press conference yesterday, right? Because there's really nothing but the press conference that people are reacting to, although I will say this indictment of this of a woman as an alleged Russian spy and her relationship to the NRA, I think is a pretty huge. But I don't think that's what people are reacting to in the media. And the behavior of Donald Trump seems to suggest that he is maybe some type of asset or for Putin. I don't know that he is, frankly, but certainly there is outrage from not all four quarters, but I'd say about three quarters, right? Like, you know, Sean Hannity is still with the president, but folks like Neil Cavuto and Newt Gingrich and Republican senators and staffers, and there's a lot of activity, particularly this week, that indicate people are a little bit less convinced that they are going to be around or that Republicans are going to be in charge in the coming months. And I think to a certain extent, the reaction from the press conference yesterday was a surrogate. It allowed people who needed to justify stepping away from Donald Trump to do so. Because it's just too hard of a sell to talk about anything with nuance or the sort of the broad aggregate of evidence. Much easier just to sort of say, like, there's Donald Trump apologizing for America in front of Putin and saying about his own defense Department of National Intelligence chief that, well, you know, and we mentioned this yesterday, he said one thing and but Putin says another. Like, I don't know who to believe. And I don't know. I mean, even if you think about that in the context of a small business, right? I mean, people would like, that's not appropriate. You should back your guy, not your competitors, where at least in public. And
I don't know.
Fidelity to truth.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I'm not one of those people who get too, you know, worried about the sort of the formal actions of the president when it comes to like rhetoric and whatnot. But apparently a lot of people are, or a lot of people pretend to be. I mean, I think, you know, for someone who would say like, this is where I draw the line when the president says that Dan Coates' word is not better than Vladimir Putin's, I would have drawn the line around the kidnapping of the babies. Yeah. That to me seems like a good line to draw. There's others. I would have drawn the line.
Can always find an earlier line with Trump.
There's a lot of lines. But for this one, it just seems like it's more convenient. And in some ways, it's a reflection of some of the sadder parts of our country and our national psyche. With that said, I'll take it. Because, and I haven't seen, I mean, we've seen like sort of like generic reactions. But the idea that this can't be leveraged into saying we can't really have a vote on Brett Kavanaugh. And I'm going to get into a little bit about why the judiciary is still. I feel as strongly about this today as I did 2 years ago from today. That for all that we're seeing with Democrats challenging in districts that they have no business challenging, for all that we've seen in Ocasio-Cortez going across the country and perhaps developing a even more progressive caucus, even more left caucus in the House, for all that we're seeing, at the end of the day, the judiciary can stop all of it in its tracks. And it can stop policy. It can stop voting gains. And we'll talk about that more. But all of it can be stopped in its tracks. And we will discuss in a moment. But so this is where we are. It's and we'll go through all of this, but this is it has been sort of a crazy time. And I think this clip, and we're going to see this. We're going to see more of this. There is a hardcore group of people out there. They were the dead enders when it came to George Bush. They're going to be the dead enders when it comes to Donald Trump. And Donald Trump expressed who these folks are by saying, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and I would not lose my supporters. They have been groomed and nurtured and aggregated and combed and coiffed by the Republican Party for 30 some odd years, probably actually even more much of this, I think, in many respects, is a fallout from the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act in the late 60s, mid-60s. And this is a perfect moment caught on C-SPAN that I think encapsulates what's going to be happening. And I think things are going to get a lot more crazy over the summer, folks. And here I give you a caller from Connecticut. What's her name? Mary Lou from Connecticut calling in to C-SPAN. This is from yesterday.
It's in Newington, Connecticut, line for Independence. Mary Lou, good morning.
Pause it. One second. This is the Independent line, incidentally.
I love the Independent line. There's a lot of mischief that happens on the C-SPAN Independent line.
There we go. This is, she's an Independent.
It's in Newington, Connecticut, line for Independence. Mary Lou, good morning.
Good morning. I'll try not to sound too awful, but I want to thank the Russians for interfering with our election to stop Hillary Clinton from becoming president. That woman has got illusions of grandeur, and so hasn't her husband. That man, the whole time he was in the White House, was just fooling around sexually with Monica Lewinsky. He is an accused rapist. He has never denied it. And his wife never did anything to stop him from doing that.
Mary Lou, let me ask you, do you think Russian interference was the reason that President Trump won in 2016?
Yes, because the Russians interfered. I mean, what would we do with Hillary in that White House? That woman, she doesn't know what she was doing. What a mess she made of Benghazi. What she did with those emails to put a server in her living room or wherever she put it.
That's Mary Lou.
I don't know what to tell you, folks. This is, you know, fortunately, Mary Lou does not seem to have the physical strength to harm us. She may have a weapon, and we may have to go and take it from her. But this is where we're at.
The only thing more mischief than the Independent line is the, like, Obama's subhuman. I'm a Democrat.
Right.
That's the Democrat
line. I come
line.
From a Democratic family. We voted Democrat, and I just can't vote for the Kenyan socialist
I'm a Democrat.
Friends with the woman who's married to the rapist.
I vote for Democrats at every election. But did you know that since 1984, there hasn't been a single rape that's actually happened in the United States unless it was done by Bill Clinton? And I'm a Democrat.
Is there anything more illustrative?
I'll tell you what. I hate to rain on the war parade here, but thank God Russia stepped in. Because if my wife was elected president, we would be in a much worse situation right now. That woman would do everything. She was planning on invading Trinidad to bring Russia into a proxy war into the Caribbean. Cuban Missile Crisis was 3.0, except this time with the button press because of my wife's bloodlust.
So there you have it.
Thank God for Russian interference. Thank God.
I mean, I think Bill Clinton is a gross piece of shit, and I watched the whole interview with Juanita Broderick, and I believe her, but Hillary didn't do that. So.
That's right. Well, I made him.
Word.
Well, no, but here's the thing, is that...
Exactly. Just be, like, clipped, like that 10 seconds right there?
Right, right. And but here is... But let me also sort of almost go a step further. It is not Hillary Clinton's fault that she gets blamed for Bill Clinton. And it is not Hillary Clinton's fault that that woman represents, who called in, Mary Lou from Connecticut, represents a huge, not a majority, but a huge swath of the American electorate. And... You know, and there's probably a subset. There's probably you move on the spectrum to, like, I don't like the Russian interference. I'm not happy they interfered, but I believe everything that lady said. You know, like,
right.
That's a... And so when we talked about Hillary Clinton not being a good candidate, part of that was they made some campaign mistakes. Part of it was she was coming into this election with massive baggage that was in no means her, a function of who she was or her fault. But at the end of the day, like, I don't believe that you have elections for people who deserve it. Like, you know, I can see maybe operating your small business that way with, like, you know, this guy's been coming in, and I'm speaking completely hypothetical now, been coming in early every day and staying late. They really deserve this promotion.
Yeah, like, you can't run that, things that way.
That, you, that, but that's not how you choose someone to serve the country, right? Like, it's just not, or to be
especially
a candidate.
When there's a popular element.
Yeah,
to it.
It's like, it's just like, it would be nice if you could do that.
My wife was going to force me to rape the prime minister of Jamaica's wife so that we would be involved in a ground invasion there to bring Russia in. You people see nothing. Her bloodlust will stop at nothing. So thank God for Vladimir Putin's long-term vision to block my wife from being president.
But this is the insanity.
This is Bill calling from the Democrat line. I'm a Democrat, too, by the way.
This is the insanity that exists in this country. And it wasn't. It just didn't grow. I mean, it was. There was hundreds of millions of dollars spent to create Mary Lou. Hundreds of millions, billions of dollars.
2008 was almost a perfect scenario where you had Hillary run, so you had all these loonies sort of focusing on her, and Obama could sort of draft up and be sort of protected for like the first.
I think that's absolutely the case.
And these people are now preparing their brains for a preponderance of evidence that Russia interfered in the election.
Well, you just saw it. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. It was worth it. It was worth it. And we're going to hear a bunch of that, and we're going to hear, I mean, that's, and understand, if you're watching Fox News, I mean, to turn to Fox News yesterday, the press conference was literally like the fourth story. I mean, it just, there is a completely different narrative that exists out there. And this is what they get. Here is Sean Hannity sitting down with Donald Trump. And remember, Sean Hannity, probably second or third most powerful guy in the country now. He is an advisor to Donald Trump. His buddy Bill Shine is now working there at the White House. And this is their plan. They're saying, like, this is their, this, they think they got this. And to a certain extent, they do, insofar as everybody watching, except for folks like us who are hate watching it and watching for the spectacle, they buy all of it and more. They buy what they're going to see here, and then they add, like, and the truth is actually probably better for Trump.
Reading between the lines.
I'm reading between the lines because they can't come out and say that because the liberal media will attack him. Good.
And there was this mystery answer that I think surprised a lot of people by the president of Russia as it relates to the Mueller investigation.
Right. Well, first of all, he said there was no collusion whatsoever. I guess he said as strongly as you can say it. They have no information.
Can we just go back and just look at the face, the look on his face when he's saying this right there? Yeah. Like, that's the look I give. That is honestly like the trademark, like, are you like that? Like, I had a buddy, you know, all comedians, that look you'll see on a comedian's face where it's like a guy who, was high every moment of the day. And that was the look on his face when someone would say, like, hey, do you want to smoke this joint? And the guy's like, no. I mean,
I totally don't want to do that.
I totally don't. That's what that look is. Like, and he can't, it's like, he there's something in his, like, his physiology is making him make that face. But go ahead.
Investigation.
Well, first of all, he said there was no collusion whatsoever. He said as strongly as you can say it, they have no information on Trump. It was an interesting statement, too. You know, many years ago when I was there, what was it, 13, 14, a long time ago, he said there were many, many business people there. In all fairness, I was a very successful businessman, but I was one of a lot of people. And one thing you know, if they had it, it would have been out.
He said it was nonsense.
He said it's nonsense, is right. And he also said there's absolutely no collusion, which you know, and everybody that watches your show.
Pause it. Like, first off, aside from the insanity of Donald Trump saying the guy who is charged with colluding with me has said there was no, that it was not there. The guy who is under suspicion for robbing the bank has said explicitly, did not rob the bank. The guy who is under suspicion of robbing the bank did not say, did not rob the bank. He never said no collusion. He didn't say, all he said was like, I didn't even know he was in town.
There's lots of people I could have colluded with.
Yeah, no.
There are plenty of bank robberies that take place. But I didn't know he was there at the time. That's the only thing Trump can resist. I'm sure he did know, because that was a big deal.
I mean,
everything else,
probably knew. To be fair, I was still pretty well known, even though he didn't know.
I was like number two of the 500.
I didn't know. Like, you can't let that go. And that's why I think to a certain extent, like, you need to question what he's saying up there if it's really indicative of him trying to escape the charges, because he is so insane that even when he's covering for himself, he can't, like, it's one thing to get off this whole collusion thing. It's another thing to say that I'm not a big business.
Oh, he knew I was in town.
I mean, like, yeah.
Oh, trust me, he knew.
But the point is, I'm not guilty.
So the denials are 100% right, but the idea he didn't know who I was.
Yeah, he sort of knew.
Yeah.
I also said there's absolutely no collusion, which you know, and everybody that watches your show knows, and I think most of the country knows, and Tucker standing right over there definitely knows.
Tucker Carlson knows.
He gets it. He's one of the people that get it. But I'll tell you that I thought it was a really amazing time.
Definitely
not about that. I think it's a shame. We're talking about nuclear proliferation. We're talking about Syria and humanitarian aid. We're talking about all of these different things, and we get questions on the witch hunt. And I don't think the people out in the country buy it, but the reporters like to give it a shot. I thought that President Putin was very, very strong.
Let's talk about how the day went.
There you go.
And then it ends with like, and also just in general, I worship dictators.
Yes. He's super strong. He was super strong. Great, great performance. I thought he was really good.
Tucker gets me. I've had three dads. My dad, Roy Cohn, Vladimir Putin. Strong guys. Great guys.
Straight guys. Great guys. Hey, folks, we have a new sponsor. It's BetterHelp.com. This is, it is a service that provides affordable, private online counseling. You get unlimited access to a licensed, trained, fully accredited therapist that is perfect for you. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on your computer. You can do it through text, voice, or video chat. They're LGBT friendly. They're great for couples counseling. Anything else you're going through in life right now, you want to call up and talk about, like, you're worried about the future of the country, I don't blame you. All you need to do is go to betterhelp.com/majority. You fill out a questionnaire. They match you with a counselor who is perfect for you, and you can start counseling today. If you decide you don't vibe with that therapist, you can switch whenever you want. It's less expensive than in-person counseling, but you're still getting a great help from licensed professionals. And if you have trouble affording it, BetterHelp even has a financial aid package available. You're always connected to your counselor. You have unlimited access, which means you can talk to them every day if you want. You can connect from anywhere on your phone, like I say, at work, on the go. So you're not wasting time traveling to anyone's office and sitting around in a waiting room. When I lived in LA, I did a lot of, back in the day when I was acting, I did phone sessions with my therapist in New York. And then at one point, I didn't want to travel to LA to 40 minutes to get in the car. And it's effective. A lot of people are not comfortable talking to a therapist in person, like I say, or simply don't have the time, or they can't afford it. BetterHelp deals with all of those problems. You can sign up right now, save on quality professional therapy by going to BetterHelp.com/majority. BetterHelp.com/majority. All right, so let's run down where we're at. In addition to what we saw with Trump in Russia, and I think, you know, to a large extent, this is why we saw Mueller drop these. I mean, I feel like they know, obviously, a lot more than we have a sense of at this point. Or at the very least, they know stuff that we can speculate on. And I think it was a very conscious effort to drop those 12 or 13 indictments before Trump met with Putin. Because, again, the idea that you wouldn't cancel this summit over this is very far-fetched, right? I mean, or push it back. But this is pretty standard operating procedure. To go and meet with them after they've been accused of this by your people, who presumably you think are acting in the best interests of the country. Now, maybe you don't think that, but you'd have to establish that. But to go, and remember, this is a summit where, when asked about the agenda, Donald Trump said, "I'll tell you afterwards." It's strange that they didn't cancel the summit or punt. We're going to push this back 2 months. I mean, they did this with, like, what, with the Mexican president, right? Or didn't they do it with Australia? I mean, like, when you have these type of controversies, particularly in this situation, that's what you do. That's what you do. But they didn't do it. And so it was weird. And I think Mueller wanted to give the president the opportunity to react in the way that a normal president would. And that's not overly belligerent, right? I mean, the idea that if it, like, came out that the U.S., there was charges in Mexico that the United States had had meddled in the their election via funding, via internet hacking and stealing and information, and that the president of Mexico would be like, "No worries, we're not going to react to this at all." If I was a citizen of Mexico, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, just think of any number of places where we've instigated coups. What if, you know, like, say Allende resisted the coup and he survived. Would he the next week be like, "Yeah, and Richard Nixon should come to town"?
Absolutely, of course not. It's absurd. It's absurd.
Diplomacy. Diplomacy comes second.
So I think Trump was set up on some level to, it was a test. Let me put it that way. I wouldn't say it was set up. It was a test. He didn't do so well, and the sort of, I guess, the establishment reacted in the way that was somewhat predictable. The establishment and more. And I'm not saying that in a derisive term. I'm just saying that, like, you know, that it was so outside of the norm of behavior. Meanwhile, yesterday, after the summit, the DOJ... And this was an investigation that parallels Mueller's. It was not Mueller who did this. Now,
two witch hunts?
Dual witch hunts. Multiple I would be very hunts. Surprised if Mueller was not either finding information they were passing on or aware of what's going on. But Justice Department now arrested and charged a Russian national who courted the NRA and Republican Party, and the DOJ claims was secretly working as a foreign agent. In a sworn affidavit, FBI agent Kevin Helsin, and this is the way it is. It's not just some FBI agent says, like, "Hey, I have these suspicions." This is they present the evidence through this way. Said Maria Butina worked to set up a, quote, back channel communications between Americans and the Kremlin. Her effort was underway by March 2015. So this predates Donald Trump. It kicked into high gear during the election season. These lines could be used by the Russian Federation to penetrate the U.S. national decision-making apparatus to advance the agenda of the Russian Federation, according to the affidavit. It does not name the gun rights organization, but you simply need to Google Butina and NRA to see that this has been an ongoing story. I mean, I'm looking at something by Josh Israel. I think this was from the Daily Beast. Why has the NRA been cozying up to Russia? This is from November 2016. From February of 2017, the Kremlin and GOP have a new friend, and boy, does she love guns. I mean, it's all about this this woman and the inroads she had been making into the NRA and other conservative organizations. Butina's apparent supervisor is the Russian Senator Alexander Torshin, who also spent years building relationships in the NRA. I mean, the reason why you would go to the NRA is probably twofold. One is they have incredible sway over the Republican Party, and two, they're incredibly corrupt, and maybe there's a shared affinity for guns. The evidence set forth in the affidavit suggests the NRA was being used by the Russian government as a conduit to the Republican Party and political leaders in the U.S. There is something like $30 million extra that the NRA spent in this election in 2016. She is a lifetime NRA member. She attended the NRA's 2014 yearly meeting as a special guest of the organization's president. This is a woman who is in her mid-20s. Her organization that she, I guess, built, I don't know. Paid for David Clark for travel and accommodations. At that same NRA meeting. Butina's influence operation was underway in March 2015, according to the affidavit, when she emailed an American with a proposal called Project Discretion Diplomacy. She predicted that an unnamed major political party, which we know is the Republican Party, would ascend to power in 2016. The American responded with advice on how to cultivate relationships in that party, as well as a list of Americans she should get to know. You have already met all the Americans necessary to introduce you to everyone on that list. Now, this guy, I believe, U.S. person number one, appears to be Paul Erickson. He is a longtime Republican insider who claimed to be an advisor to the Trump transition team. He connected her with different conservative and Republican operatives. A person who spoke with Butina told the Daily Beast that she had several meetings with Representative Dana Rohrabacher, who you will recall was the subject of a joke that was not supposed to leave the Republican caucus when Paul Ryan said that the only two people I know are paid by the Russians are Dana Rohrabacher and Donald Trump.
Getting on the square.
Rohrabacher did not immediately respond to a request for comment. There's pictures of her hobnobbing with Scott Walker, with Wayne LaPierre, with former NRA head David Keene. Butina had help, like I said, from at least one American in her effort to build back channels between top Republican Party insiders and the Kremlin. U.S. person one, that is Paul Erickson, supposedly. Unrelated to specific presidential campaigns, I've been involved in securing a very private line of communication between the Kremlin and political party leaders. We know that's Republican leaders through, of all conduits, the NRA, he wrote. Maybe he lied. Butina also targeted the National Prayer Breakfast as her effort to shore up. So there, it is quite possible that there was money funneled through the NRA to Republican Party leaders. Now, does that mean the Republican Party leaders knew where the money was coming from? Probably not. Although there may have been suspicions at one point, right? These things tend to get a little leaky. Why would the NRA do this? Well, what happened? I mean, there's always a person, right? She doesn't show up and walk up to the bank and say, I'd like to deposit this money into the NRA bank account. There's conduits, and these conduits always get a cut. They always get a cut. And so the answer is an organization that is incredibly mercenary to the point where they will promote the sale of weapons that kill toddlers every single day in this country. Do you find it hard to believe that someone would take $30 million if they can get a 10% cut?
No, it's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win. Three wins. Winner for the payer, winner for the conduit, winner for the person who gets the money.
See, not everything's a zero-sum game.
That's right. This is not a zero-sum game.
For everybody to benefit.
Everybody benefits.
Everybody.
Everyone gets a taste.
Look, this, and Butina, then the question is, like, what's the relationship with Donald Trump? Is there any relationship to the campaign? We don't know that yet. Although, here's an interesting video. Did you get it? To check your IM. I thought this was on the list here. No. Watch this. This is a question at 2015, July 11th. This is a question during a Freedom Fest event in Las Vegas, Nevada. And here is, on CNN, the voice of Maria Butina, who has been arrested and indicted.
I'm visiting from Russia, so my question...
Putin. Good friend of Obama, Putin.
He
likes Obama a lot. Go ahead.
My question will be about foreign politics. Okay. If you would be elected as a president, what will be your foreign politics, especially in the relationships with my country? And do you want to continue the politics of sanctions that are damaging of both economy, or you have any other ideas?
Okay. Obama gets along with nobody. The whole world hates us. You know, it's an amazing thing. You look at Mexico. They hate us. They hate our leadership. And yet, they're making a fortune. China hates us. China's building ports in the South China Sea. We could never do a thing like that because we'd have to get environmental impact statements. Okay, so we don't. I jokingly said to a friend, do you think they got an environmental impact statement when they did? So China hates us.
Funny.
And yet they're making a fortune. Everybody hates us. And yet they make money with us. With me, we're going to make money on them, and they're going to like us. I know Putin, and I'll tell you what, we get along with Putin. Putin has no respect for President Obama. Big problem. Big problem. And Russia has been driven. You know, I've always heard, for years I've heard, one of the worst things that can happen to our country is if Russia ever gets driven to China. We have driven them together with the big oil deals that are being made. We've driven them together. That's a horrible thing for this country. We have made them friends because of incompetent leadership. I believe I would get along very nicely with Putin, okay? And I mean where we have the strength. I don't think you'd need the sanctions. I think that we would get along very, very well. I really believe that.
We don't need the sanctions. It's a long way to go to get there, isn't it? A long way to go to get there. So this will be interesting to see where this thread goes, but if Marcy Wheeler is correct, we're going to see more in the coming days, ladies and gentlemen. And
Are you the adoption lady? Sorry, my mistake. I should have mentioned that.
Let me just go over a little bit of like what we're seeing in terms of people starting to not necessarily run for the hills, like I say, they're not the rats aren't leaving the sinking ship, but they do seem to be keeping an eye on the life rafts. Like they're starting to like just sort of like take two steps towards the door. They're looking over their shoulder. They're looking at who they're going to have to climb over to get on that life raft, sizing up people. This is from Axios. Former senior White House official worked closely with Trump, immediately texted us, need a shower. That probably would be Reince Priebus, right?
Such a Reince, like I'm just biding my time to be
one of Trump's
Reince
own.
Priebus, rinse in the shower.
Exactly. Former National Security Council officials. Dude, this is a total effing disgrace. The president's lost his mind. Face Nation anchor Margaret Brennan was in the audience, told AP she was messaging some U.S. officials during the speech who said they were turning off the television. There were all sorts of indications. You had Devin Nunes. Remember him? He says yesterday in the afternoon. When was this? He said this yesterday. The night before. The night before he meets with, when it's clear that Trump is actually going to meet with Putin, Nunes says, and this was written first by the Washington Examiner, right? So this is going out. They're sending their leak out to their guy. What few mentioned was that there had been a similar assessment, not speculation or even reported account in the press, but an official government assessment that came to the same conclusion about these Russian military intelligence officials conducting the hacking of Democrats during the 2016. The assessment was on the House Intelligence Committee's report on Russian active measures, sent to the intelligence community on March 22nd, released publicly in a heavily censored form on April 27th. This is like what Nunes was his insurance policy, right? It's pretty clear if you read the indictment and you find you read our four findings in chapter two, even with our redactions, you get most of the indictment. House Intel Chairman Rep. Devin Nunes told me in a phone conversation on Sunday, running for the hills, folks. If you didn't have redactions, you get more than what's in the indictment, except for the Russian names.
This isn't looking good. Can I testify against my kids or Jared or something?
Exactly.
I would love to talk to Mueller about this grand conspiracy that I was manipulated
by. Exactly. Nunes is really getting out there. Hi, my name is John Miller.
This president is John would like Miller. To point
out, he's been saying this has been going on all along.
The president knew it was happening, but he was also... The president has been being a double agent to expose the crime the whole time, and he's ready to come forward.
He's ready to come forward now.
This is John Miller. The president's super upset about what's happening to America, and he's ready to blow the lid off of the criminal actions of his family. It's sad, but necessary.
It's full immunity. Full immunity.
I mean, so we're seeing... Devin Nunes, honestly, though, to see Devin Nunes, the guy who jumped out of his car with his aide in the middle of the night and literally sprinted to the White House to get Donald Trump information on what testimony was going on, is now coming out and claiming that he oversaw a process that had basically, you know, found this stuff about the Russian hacking, and trying to promote that now is indicative of like them being aware that the jig may very well be up. Now, understand this. They're not going to impeach him.
No.
They're not going to impeach him. They're going to just try and basically play this out until the fall. And there's other indications that...
Do you think, like, it's funny, like, I agree, definitely not going to be impeached, but I am actually starting to see a scenario where he goes to jail. Like,
ultimately,
that to me is like, wow, he might actually
not
leave
while
office.
He's president.
Not while he's... No, I'm talking post-president.
Oh!
I'm like...
I haven't...
I honestly thought, like, you know, I've been of the mind that, like, you know, turn the other page type of stuff, but the more this goes on, I'm like, this dude might go to jail.
Oh, I think when he's in a position that he could go to jail, in other words, when he's not president, I think there are going to be people who are going to try and rehabilitate themselves by taking it out on him.
Not if he declares himself president for life first.
That's, I'm president for life. I don't know why you're putting the cuffs on me. Like he,
he's going to try to pardon
it work
himself.
That way? Pardon me.
I pardon myself.
I pardon myself.
He only asked for three things. This is John Miller. Number one, obviously, he just wants to help his country. Number two, $300 million. And number four, he would like ownership stakes in the Kiev beauty pageant industry. That's it.
We'll see, but I think that's getting way ahead of ourselves. But what is also interesting, and we'll talk about this maybe in the fun half, is, maybe we'll talk about it now, but I just want to get to this point about the judiciary and the implications of it. That's why this period between now and November is so crucial. It is clear that the Republicans are getting they're indicating that they are aware that the Democrats are probably going to take the House. I mean, like more than likely, right? I mean, you see this in the form of Ajit Pai, the FCC chief. We have spoken about this on multiple occasions. There were two elements. Well, first off, you really need to go back to October of 2016. And I believe, maybe it was in The Observer, Jared Kushner sat down with Sinclair Media and negotiated better coverage. That is what came out of that meeting. That's what they both said. Now, I don't know what the quid pro quo was, but 2 months later, Sinclair Media is making a bid for Tribune Media, which would be impossible except and unless the FCC chair decided to waive certain restrictions on media concentration, one of which involved claiming that UHF stations are still sort of somehow not equivalent to VHF stations. And the reason why many of you don't even know what I'm saying when I say those words is because you get your television via cable now. But back in the day where we had rabbit ears on our TV, a UHF station was a much more low-powered station. And so it didn't cover as much territory. So owning one of those was like owning a third of a VHF station, which was like 4, 5, 7, 2. UHF was like channel 38, channel 56, channel 27. But on cable, all of these have the exact same signals. Because it's digital now. It's all the same signals. However, Ajit Pai decided we're gonna not count formerly UHF stations as VHF, and so you can own more. And we're going to waive part of or reinterpret some of the rules on local control so that you can own more of these stations. And now, all of a sudden, Ajit Pai on Monday said he had serious concerns about Sinclair Broadcast Group's proposed $3.9 billion acquisition of Tribune Media, a surprise move which could potentially scuttle the deal. It will. The FCC proposed referring the matter to an administrative judge, which will slow everything down, and it will definitely kill the deal. But here's the interesting part. That's all interesting. But the Inspector General of the FCC is probing allegations that Ajit Pai gave them a sweetheart deal, that there was some type of quid pro quo. And Ajit Pai realizes, like, oh, in 6 months, there could be hearings on this. Yep. How did Sinclair Media respond? Remember, see if you can pull that up on Google. Just Jared Kushner, Sinclair
Media.
There's
a lot of heat on the organization right now, so maybe you want to start covering even your little side bases.
Ajit Pai is looking out for himself.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
And he's realizing, like, there it is. This is, Politico from December. I'm sorry, it was December of 2016. We struck a deal with Sinclair for straighter coverage, and they I think they struck that deal during, okay, Donald Trump's campaign struck a deal with Sinclair Broadcast Group during the campaign to try and secure better media coverage, his son-in-law Jared Kushner told business executives Friday in Manhattan. What kind of idiot says that, announces it? We did it before the election. What did you have to offer them, this media company of such integrity?
Just having nice
I don't know why nobody else has ever referenced this article, but I keep coming back to it. And here's Sinclair Media's response. They are, and there's questions of misconduct that is floating around here. And their response was, we are shocked. Shocked. That is basically like, hey, what happened to our deal? We had a deal, man. We had a deal. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens if that deal goes down, because I wonder if Boris, what's his name?
Epstein.
Boris Epstein will have a job anymore. I mean, there was a lot of give here, right? We're going to put Boris on. We're going to give you better media coverage. What's the get? And if they don't get the get, I mean,
Agipi better duck.
Well, not just Agipi, right? I mean, they were promised something. And if they didn't get it, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to it. So Agipi, he's out the door. And in fact,
servant of two masters.
Indeed. One of them turns out to be a jerk.
There was an orgy of corruption in my administration that I had no part of.
So Agipi, one rat that's starting to, at the very least, look for that that boat, that life raft. And we're now seeing this, and that's a fundamental policy impact of the Democrats just not even winning, of maybe winning. Sinclair Media was going to have the most clearance of any independently owned station group in the country. They were going to have something like 70% coverage. And I can assure you, a lot of that is in the Midwest. And so people were going to go from listening to Hannity and Levin in their car, get out, watch the local news, be watching essentially baby Fox, and then turn on Fox. This is going to have, this is a big deal that this is queered. And look, there's still going to be investigations. Agipi is just covering himself. Another piece of evidence. Last week, this is coming out of the Texas Tribune, Beto O'Rourke revealed that he had raised $10.4 million between April and June in his bid to unseat Republican Ted Cruz. I don't know if he's going to win, but some Democratic challengers raised two, three, four, even five times what their Republican incumbent rivals did. This is in Texas. Now, usually what happens in Texas is they raise so much money that they actually spread it around the country. Now the money's flowing the other direction. And we have stories about the Senate races in Ohio and in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Minnesota, where you had Democratic senators who people were worried about. They have dumped something like $11 million already in Wisconsin to unseat Tammy Baldwin. And she's up by 11 points on the generic Republican still. So there's a real concern amongst the Republicans that they're going to take a beating. There's a special election in Ohio that's taking place in the 12th congressional district. And I think it's happening in like 3 weeks, August 7th. It's a Republican district, but it's another one of those things where the Democrat, and he's not progressive by he's not to the left, you know, obviously of like an OAC, but this is a guy who's going out there and vehemently protecting Social Security and Medicare. Now, this guy running, we wouldn't pay, but, you know, I'm saying generically speaking, someone running in this district, even last cycle, not only would we not be paying attention because they'd have no chance, they would have already been talking about entitlement reform, would already be the headline. So now we're talking about somebody who's going to win and that they're talking about protecting Medicare and Social Security. Like, not protecting it by cutting, protecting it by making sure no benefits get cut. That's a big deal. Across the country, Republicans are taking it on the chin over two things, infrastructure and healthcare. And this is what's indicative of this. We mentioned last week that the Trump administration cut funding for the Obamacare. There were three different payments that went with Obamacare to insurance companies. One were the risk corridors. One was risk adjustment. And one was subsidies based upon individuals in terms of like a certain share of profits. Two of them have expired. One still remain, so that because part of it is because of the mandate, but broadly speaking, insurance companies are still getting used to who the people they're going to be covering in these exchanges. And so there are extra subsidies that provided for depending on how sick the people are in your risk pool. The administration suspended $10.5 billion of payments to insurers. They've also cut money for navigators, but that's a little bit more downstream, so you don't see that as much. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady, Republican from Texas, right, where they're getting slaughtered in terms of fundraising, where they are aware that they actually may lose seats in Texas, said on Monday he's in talks with the Trump administration about ways to restart these payments. You have Republicans negotiating with the administration to refund Obamacare right now. They are terrified. So just the idea that Democrats are going to perhaps win in November is already causing policy implications. Now, these measures are all sort of, you know, chicken feed in some respects. Although the Sinclair thing is not. That's also one of those things like, you know, I saved your life, but I didn't kill you. And these payments would surely come back in time, and we need a much better system than Obamacare. But it's just a way of getting a sense of what's going on. And as we get closer to the election and the polling starts to reflect a better model of who's going to show up, this race in Ohio is a big deal. That will also be another bellwether. How much can this Democrat make up? I don't know that they're going to win, but how much they make up is going to be interesting to see, because that's a very Republican district. So it's going to be insane, folks, because the other thing that Mitch McConnell knows, right? And how, let me just reiterate this again, like I do almost every day, how it is that there aren't thousands of people paid by the Democratic Party to literally sit out in front of Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell's house, car, business, families, get-togethers, wherever it is, and hold them accountable for Donald Trump. I don't know. But if Kavanaugh gets on that Supreme Court, they will dismantle what remains of the Voting Rights Act. And there will basically be a run across the country to disenfranchise hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of minority voters, most of whom will vote Democratic. So you're talking about 2 to 3 percentage points that could be shaved off of elections. And that is Wisconsin, arguably was the difference, certainly in terms of numbers, could be the difference in Wisconsin, in Michigan. You know, we're talking about less than 1% of the electorate in those two places.
It's strategic white supremacy.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's what it always is. And I just want to say, just to register, because this will never happen, but, you know, the sanctimony caucus, like Flake, McCain, to some extent, Susan Collins, if you were remotely serious about any of this, you would immediately become independents, caucus with Democrats, and kill this process. Not even because of an ideological change, but because you're so offended by how compromised our country has become. And until
right.
you do
and
that,
you know what's interesting?
Up.
I would say that sentiment, which of course is something that we've articulated for 2 years, I mean, even during the election, I think, that sentiment is now permeating wider circles.
That's what I'm trying to feed it more, because I am picking up more of that like even people a year ago who would say, oh, isn't it great that Jeff Flake said that, like,
right,
calling kids retarded is bad,
right,
are now actually saying maybe you need to actually
do something. Right.
Yeah. Agree.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, this program relies on you for its funding. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget to check out betterhelp.com/majority. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Tonight on TMBS, Matt Taibbi in studio. And I can't remember who else yet.
Briefly, Julia Salazar, who's a great DSA state senate candidate, and a bunch more stuff. Patreon.com/TMBS, iTunes, YouTube, and soon this week we're launching a TMBS TV YouTube channel.
Oh, exciting. Jamie, the Antifada on Patreon.com, you guys recorded one last night?
We did. We have a new one in the can. I was very tired because we were supposed to record on Sunday, but Sean was hungover from his birthday that day. But we talked some good shit about Elon Musk.
Is this the cult deprogramming episode?
You know what? He actually made a pretty interesting case. Like, I thought we were pretty much just going to take cheap shots at Elon Musk because he's extremely mad online and it's easy to do. But he actually made a case for why Elon Musk is not the worst capitalist and we need a more systemic view of these things. So I was not expecting that to happen. We also talked some crap on Jean-Claude Van Damme, because why not?
Oh,
still alive.
I don't know if I appreciate that.
I honestly didn't even know he's still
alive. Oh, and I sang.
Oh.
Grimes?
Yes.
Dope.
Matt?
Yeah, Literary Hangover, Sleepy Hollow is the most recent episode. You can get the last three on YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, all those places. And Young Goodman Brown, you're going to play the full short story for you on this coming Saturday.
All right, going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back.